Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Watch my finger, Tim, because that'll be
I'll hear
to go.
I'll hear it through your cans, I reckon.
Right, here you go, Tim.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And here we are with the World Cup quarterfinals just hours away. It's the most rugbyest time of the year. In fact, I'll say that, I have missed the rugby midweek. That is the one, it's bittersweet, this part of the World Cup. Sorry, I should, let me get the business organised first. JB's right there.
Hello, Timothy.
Phil is there.
Hello, Tim.
I'm Tim, and yes, thank you for listening. We're at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. Hit subscribe in your feed wherever you get us, on Acast, on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else, because we've got pods coming thick and fast. And yeah, it's bittersweet at the minute, because on the one hand, we're excited because it's reached business time at the
business
World Cup.
Time.
On the flip side, no waking up and having games early in the morning.
It is a shame. And this is where the World Shield competition would come in. So we could start our games on Thursday with like Namibia, Canada or some such thing. Really whet the appetite. Or maybe we start on Wednesday with Namibia, Canada or some such thing. And then on Friday we have a game from the Women's World Cup.
All at the same time?
All on the same week. Imagine finals week, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, done.
However it works, more rugby is good with me. Mind you, we've got plenty with the Premiership and stuff. We'll have a separate Premiership preview podcast. So like I say, hit subscribe in your feed. Let's get straight into the Rugby World Cup. Eddie Jones and Michael Checker have made some bold selections. Have they got it right?
Who knows? I have no idea.
You sound like Michael Checker.
Yeah, I don't know the rules.
I don't know. What am I supposed to know? How am I supposed to know? I don't
know.
Well,
the rules.
We'll find out, won't we?
Yeah, no one can know that. Come on, Tim. What's wrong with you? Bold calls. I think the boldest call, based on what I know, is Jordan Petea being selected for only his third international game. Which will be his first start. He's played less than 80 minutes of international rugby at this point.
He's not played that much more rugby of any senior, of any kind at senior level.
He's 19. He's never played 13 internationally. He's undoubtedly, based on the highlight reels, extensive highlight reels that I've seen, undoubtedly an incredible talent. Is this the time, is the World Cup quarterfinal the time to be gambling on the potential of a prospective talent?
Maybe James O'Connor, his breathing meditation hasn't been going very well. He's got himself in a bad headspace.
Yeah, maybe he's injured himself with some nunchucks. You just don't know, do you? You don't know.
Well, he's on the bench. So if James O'Connor's the outside back sub. So if he has done either of those things, it can't be that serious.
It's all part of the journey, bro.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
More breathing, James. That's what he needed. But I mean, it's a very bold time to do it. It's a very bold call indeed. What do you think his thinking is?
I don't think he knows. I honestly don't think he knows. I think it's like, well, looking at the England team, we are going to get physically dominated. This guy's really talented.
You think that's what he's thinking?
You've got to be honest with yourself, right?
I don't think Australia are thinking that about... I don't think physically dominated is what they're thinking.
Well, let's break it down a bit. I mean, like, they are not as physically underwhelming as maybe I'm making out. Particularly the second rows, who I like an awful lot. But actually, man for man, they're going to be overpowered by, you know, 5-10%. I think that's reasonable to say. And also, well, why not? I mean, they've got no video on this guy. They will know best because they're training with him. So, you know, they'll have the inside track. And if they deem it necessary, I guess it would be the right call.
So,
yeah, go on.
My explanation for that selection would be what you've just hinted at, Jay. This is where my head comes. I've run it all through and trying to think out the logic. The only place I keep coming back to is England will have virtually no game tape on this guy. He's a very talented runner and stepper. So maybe it is just doing something, putting someone in there who is totally unpredictable, who is a game changer and line breaker.
And just remember, Matt Gitto had his debut at 19, although it was under Eddie Jones and it was off the bench. But he still had his debut at 19 with zero provincial rugby. Is it provincial, you'd say? Franchise rugby, super rugby. There you go.
Yeah.
So yeah, it has worked before.
So two other points I want to make on the selection. The halfback selection is interesting.
Mm.
Lelio Fano, I was probably expecting because he's been playing so well both for the Brumbies and for Australia throughout the summer. Will Genia, I wasn't expecting because Nick White has been excellent.
He has.
And he's been a real threat around the breakdown in order to keep defences honest and give Lelio Fano a bit more time. So I'm a little bit surprised at that. And then just to come on to the pack. So in preparation for the quarterfinals, as any good egg chaser would, I, of course, rewatched the key games from the group stages where the quarterfinalists met. So Wales, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa,
very thorough, Phil.
Ireland, Japan. Of course, I couldn't rewatch England, France because it didn't happen. But rewatch that, and I think
that's what I should have done with my midweek.
Exactly. Oh, absolutely. I got down into the gym, downstairs in my basement, and put on a rewatch of the game while I was training this week.
Did you hear it over Eye of the Tiger?
See, I love that. Phil's one of the only people I know that would have a home gym that isn't just a place where you hang your shirts.
But do you know what? He's a hypocrite. He's a massive hypocrite. Because it wasn't so long ago he used to say, well, probably still says it now, gym is no place for music, no headphones, but it's okay to watch an international rugby game down there.
Well, what I say is the gym is a place for work. And as you well know, I take my egg chasing work very, very serious, and that is work to me. So I'm not a hypocrite.
And spreadsheets.
So I think this pack, the Australian pack is better than people give it credit for.
100%.
Their set piece is better than people give it credit for. And write them off at your peril.
Yep.
I think they will put real pressure both at scrum time and line out time. The bit that I think is missing, and someone put on a great article on Twitter about this, is the threat of the turnovers from their back row. And I can't remember who put this on. It might have been Alex Shaw, but I might be crediting the wrong person there. And
was it a Rugby Pass article?
It might have been. It might have been.
If it was, I want to say that the lady who wrote it's first name is Rihanna or something. So anyway, no, we'll find out who it is and credit it on Twitter.
Yeah, I'll see if I can retweet
it. Was it about the sevens?
It was comparing. So in 2015, when Australia were, well, successful getting to the final of the World Cup, they and hammered England in a game that I was at, they had Pooper in full flight. They've now got Pooper in full flight, but the number of turnovers that Pooper have affected in this tournament compared to 2015 is massively down, and the article was hypothesizing that the difference is now you've got Nisarani, who is a big ball carrying number 8 rather than a workhorse like Scott Fardy, who was playing number 6 in that scenario. So it's an interesting, it's a big powerful pack. Maybe the threat of the turnover is not what it was 4 years ago,
or maybe, as I'd like to point out, people know how to deal with it more. I mean, maybe teams specialise now in how to disrupt jacklers. They're not always successful, but they do specialise.
And supporting, picking an intelligent supporting line, so you can offer a supporting from an offload for a ball carrier, but also you can clear out immediately after they go down.
And laws have been tinkered with in the last 4 years. I would say, going back to something that was said earlier, when I look at Australia, I don't think, for the first time probably in a World Cup, since they last won a World Cup, I don't think they risk being overpowered. And I genuinely think if they'd have started the game with the 15 on the field that finished the game against Wales, there's every chance that they would have beaten Wales. Foley had an absolute shocker, and they played the wrong game plan. They got it right. So I'm confident, but yeah, the Pettier is an interesting call. As for England, let's flip over to England and their midfield. So JB and I did a look at our feed for a podcast with the guys from Green and Gold, our Aussie friends, and I was thinking about what we were talking about in that when I saw the team, and I did say that I wish we'd had the France game, because I think Henry Slade was a man that Eddie Jones would have been looking at as very, very important come the knockout, and he chucked him straight in.
Yeah. Yep.
With what, how many minutes? 30 minutes?
30 maximum, and he didn't play particularly well when he's been on the field, because he's been injured for quite a long time. He didn't play any of the warm-up games.
Nope. And look at form, combine that with looking at form, Owen Farrell had a stinker of a match by his very, very high standards. And George Ford's been playing so well at 10. And Manu Tuilagi probably isn't a 12. So, again, a bold call, I would suggest.
It is a bold call.
And you wonder if it's reactive, don't you? So you wonder if there's a little bit of chess going on here, which is Karevi's going to play. We need a big physical presence to stop him. Maybe Ford and Farrell wouldn't be that, but maybe Tuilagi and Farrell... is that?
Do you is there any chance that he thought about what his knockout side would be before the World Cup? If I'm going to beat New Zealand or South Africa, I know the players I want on the field. Because this is his Six Nations winning
so that's,
back line.
Well, not winning back line.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's the Six Nations back line.
It's
that
the
look,
back line look that played four out of the five games in the Six Nations. It's the 10, 12, 13 that played four out of five games. And it's a centre partnership that scored five tries between them in the Six Nations. Mm. So that's where my head is. I think he was always tinkering with the Ford Farrell as another option. And it suits for the, let's call them the easier games, the tier two and the slightly weaker teams. But in my head, this is more of a knockout rugby. I referred to it last week. The Northern Hemisphere team certainly play a more simplified brand of rugby when the pressure comes on. Saracens have been unbelievably effective playing a more simplified... Oh, generally, they can go expansive when they need to be, but generally more simplified game.
And Tuilagi's going to have a 12 on his back. However, I fully expect Slade to pop up with his left foot closer to Farrell.
Yes, yeah, those two will interchange a little bit. Which again, we did see in the Six Nations, took some great effect in some of the games, lesser effect in other games.
Mm.
I quite like the combination, because by bringing Slade in, you've still got the two ball players, you've still got two kicking options, you've still got two ball players. And a key thing for England, when there's turnover ball, when the game breaks down a little bit, it's bringing Watson, Daly and May into the game, and you can do that more effectively by having two ball players.
Yeah, agreed. Well, if I look at what would be England's strongest side, then I think the one player I would, again, looking at the France and looking ahead, again, God, there's no guarantees you get past Australia, but I want Jack Noll in my 15.
So yeah. Well, it depends. Jack Noll is great. I mean, he really is great.
He's like a game breaker. It's like you need someone to do something. You need someone to spark something and pull a rabbit out of a hat with 5 minutes to go and your points down. Jack Noll's that kind of guy.
I don't think he is. I think he's a guy who
He's done it for Exeter time and again.
So I don't see Jack Noll as that. I see him as a very effective player. I see him as a guy you want on for 80 minutes to work hard and break and make lots of little breaks. I don't see him as a single big play Joe Cocker-Singer type. I mean, that's sort of how I imagine a guy who's going to make a big intervention. Jack Noll's great, but he does lots and lots of small things really, really well, rather than one big thing. I'd like him to start, if anything, but not sure I'd want him off the bench necessarily.
No, I like his energy off the bench because he works so hard, but he can work even harder relative in a condensed period of time. So he can make those maybe 30 positive involvements in 80 minutes, but he could make 15 in 20 minutes.
And he pops up taking balls just around the fringes of a ruck.
Yeah, king of the pick and go. Yeah, self-proclaimed.
100%. That's irrelevant. He's not in the 23. Yeah. But when I look at what the cost of missing the France game was, Jack Nowell is one of the costs. Mm. And he's taken a risk with Henry Slade, but I like it.
I would probably, if I was going to have Jack Nowell in my 23, he would be on my bench.
A quick question, can Jack Nowell really play 10 positions?
I'm not so sure he can be an international back row.
Not sure he could be an international 12.
Or 13, really.
Yeah,
he can
really
do a job in the back
row. If Jack Nowell was Australian, he would be in at 13 ahead of James O'Connor.
That is insane. That is just insane. No. They're completely different skill sets, different players. Jack Nowell would be on the bench for Australia. He'd be a back row.
He'd be starting.
He's probably more like Cooper than anyone else in England.
He might be physically closest to Hooper.
And with everyone's talking about the centre battle, but I actually think Cooper versus Cunderhill.
Very good.
The kamikaze kids.
That's the battle.
I'm going to call this now.
That's the battle.
I think the England pair of Underhill and Curry Cunderhill are better than Hooper Pocock. I just think that.
Madness. You can't say that.
In this World Cup.
This is the kind of game where reputations are made.
Yeah. I'm not sure that we'll look back at their careers and say those two have had a better career than those two. I mean, because the two which I'm referring to, Hooper and Pocock, have already had a outstanding career. So there's no taking that away from them. But at this point in time, when they meet on Saturday, I think England have an advantage with their two sevens over Australia's two sevens.
Just so maybe on form, but for longevity. I mean, Hooper and Pocock.
Yeah, because
class.
And besides, Underhill probably won't last that long.
He might not have any longer.
We are privileged to watch him play.
So I've just looked up Hooper. Hooper is 27 years old. How many caps has he got?
84.
98.
Wow. Wow. That's like,
jeez.
And at least one of them was outside centre.
Yeah.
George North is meant to be on track to beat the Welsh record for caps.
I think he probably is, but I think Hooper
he's on 70
Hooper is ahead of that.
Good God. Yeah, so I think England will have the advantage.
This is 27. This is prime. This is like Hooper taking his side, his side to a World Cup final.
It does feel. I mean, that I'm actually astonished by that. I thought he's about 31 because he's been around for so long.
Yeah,
and he's 27.
George North is also 27,
and he has about 75 caps, I'd guess.
He's 89 for Wales and 3 for the Lions. So 92.
Wow. Yeah, so, those two are
so
on for records.
Slightly ahead of him, but yeah, Hooper could have at least another
and
5
by
years.
Way, George North
and another 50 plus
stands
caps
on the wing. just put that into context. George North stands on the wing and has infrequent carries.
Hooper sticks his head in ugly places for 80 minutes every game.
Yeah.
Crikey, that's an achievement.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, well, speaking of the Underhill thing, and we were talking earlier off air. About fantasy rugby draft and the necessary robustness of players. And it's something that Gatland has referenced in when he was picking his World Cup squad, and other people have referenced. For robustness, I mean, Hooper to amass that many caps in that short a period of time, he can hardly have missed a game for the last 7, 8 years.
Yeah, it's remarkable. It is remarkable. And some people just have it. I was lucky enough today to have John O'Ross in that exact chair, in that captain's chair, and we sort of discussed that, which is, I mean, he has had a small injury, but thinking about how he plays, some players just don't get injured that often.
I read a brilliant article on ESPN last night about NBA and basketball players.
Shut up and dribble.
It was about the Tinderization of basketball players. Basketball.
Okay.
And why? So this is a hypothesis.
I'm sure there's a celebrity version of Tinder that the NBA players
Did you ever hear of the app Ballers? So I don't know if it's
Hold that thought.
So there's an ESPN 30 for 30, and in that episode of, I think it's called Broke, where they discuss how sports stars go broke, which of course ticked all of my boxes, being financial and also sporting. They reference this app called, I want to say Ballers or Honeys, or it had a Z in it, doesn't really matter. And it would send out text alerts to women, so it can't be an app, it must be a service. It would send out text alerts to a certain type of woman when NBA players entered certain bars. And that is a service that you could subscribe to. So is that the Tinderization of NBA?
That's what you're getting at, yeah?
It's related to that. So in the last 10, 15 years, the win percentage of teams playing away has increased.
Okay.
And this article is hypothesizing that previously, there's all sorts of stories from the 80s and 90s and even early 2000s of players, because they're on the road a hell of a lot.
Yep.
They play a huge number of games a year.
That's right.
players basically being in the club until 2 a.m, popping bottles in order to get laid the night before games. And now they can basically, they're landing in Miami the following day.
Oh, I love it.
They can hook up through Tinder or whatever other NBA app there is.
Agent with non-disclosure agreements on a clipboard outside the hotel room, ready to be signed.
It was suggesting that there's players who will pre-arrange to have girl delivered to their hotel. So this is hookups. This is not paid or anything like that. But this is.
So Aaron Smith was caught doing this in Scotland.
He was just on Tinder in Scotland, wasn't he?
But I mean, I guess that's the sort of thing they were talking about.
Exactly that, but. Going back to the injury thing.
Allegedly.
Going back to the injury
thing. It wouldn't be the worst thing Aaron Smith has done.
No, it wouldn't, would it?
New father, Aaron Smith.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
So going back to the injury thing, they listed a whole host of players who were supremely talented.
What are we talking about?
We're talking about injuries.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
But the drinking culture in those days, because people were having to hook up through clubs, was much bigger and accredited for significantly higher injury rates. So, the article,
How is this relevant to the quarterfinals this week?
Basically, Hooper's all over it. No.
We were talking about the robustness of players and injury rates.
Yeah.
And maybe these guys who are...
No wonder Hooper plays every game. He loves the long trips.
Yeah.
Oh, Buenos Aires again. Awesome.
Cape Town. Yes, please.
Right, prediction. How do you think it's going?
I think they'll all be swiping left or right. I don't know.
A lot of people in Tokyo.
Yeah.
Or Oita.
I'm going to say this. I think England are favourites.
That's a fact.
Okay. No, in my mind. I'm not talking about the betting markets. In my mind, England are favourites. But what I can't shift is England's brittle nature. As good as they are, and let's face it, they're a mighty good team, and I think, under different management, I think they wouldn't just be favourites. I think they'd be favourites for the World Cup by some distance. And I have a feeling that there is a bad performance, and I think it might be this one.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was going to say, if you want to go to betting markets and find out who are the favourites, runners and riders, go to our friends at Betfair.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Betfair.co.uk. And, by the way, on the Betfair channel, there's a video and podcast that's available right now that we did with JB representing Wales, me representing England, and some fine people representing Scotland and Wales. So go and check that out. And that's the one thing I said, actually, on the first one we did of those, which is England have a bad 20 minutes in them, and that's what concerns me about England. I'm just praying it doesn't come this weekend. I don't think it will, and I think we will win by 10.
I am going to... It can't be a draw, can it? I'm going to have to say, I think I probably agree, Tim. I think, thinking about it now, England by 10. But I'm in no way confident.
They ran Wales very close.
Yeah.
They did, and they finished very strongly against Wales.
Wales are a very fit team.
Yeah, Wales are a very fit team. And that is something that England have struggled with in recent years, the final 20, 30 minutes of games.
Yeah, the first 10 minutes is going to be massive.
Yeah. I mean, that, like all England performances, cut them off early and they are done.
Yeah.
Because they are just so fit. I mean, they throw everything in that first 10 minutes. And if they get their tails up, and even sometimes when they do get their tails up and score 3 tries or 4 tries, or maybe in Scotland's case, five tries, it's still sometimes it's not enough.
Still on. And that is a point that James Horwell made with Nick Heath and Tom May on their pod, was Australia, if they want any chance of winning this, they have to start like a house on fire. They've got to stop England, but they've also got to get points.
If they stop England, it's on. If it's 0-0 by 20 minutes, it's massively on.
And you, Phil?
I'm nervous, but everything that I've seen about these two teams suggests that England should be favourites. Not massively. I mean, the bookies have got it.
8 points, is it? The handicap?
I'm using the odds to work out implied probability. So it's roughly 3 out of 4 wins for England, 1 out of 4 wins for Australia is where the odds put it. I think that's probably about right in my head. I mean, England have won the last 6 games against Australia on the bounce, which is a good thing. The last game they lost was in the World Cup in 2015, which maybe is a bad thing, because that was a knockout game.
Where were you both for that fantastic game?
I was in the East Stand at Twickenham.
You actually went to watch it with our good friends Canterbury.
I did.
Tim?
It's like my mind's been bleached. I can't remember.
I tried to get so drunk after that I would never, ever remember it. And I actually successfully achieved that in the Omani desert for the Wales versus England game in 2015.
Wow.
Right.
I'm saying England by 7 points. Right. England by 7.
Unanimous across the board.
Interestingly, the odds have shortened for England since the teams have been announced. So, read into that what you will, and the odds have slightly lengthened for Australia since the teams have been announced.
I hope we're not talking about Jerome Garces, and I hope.
Well, I mean,
and I hope we are talking about. No. I hope we are talking about an unbelievable meltdown from Michael.
You
Checker.
Mean, yeah, you mean something completely different there, Tim. You say you hope you're not talking about Garces. What you actually mean is, you hope you don't lose and you're talking about Garces. You'll be happy if you win and it's on Garces.
No, I don't want any caveats. I want England to win fair and square.
No asterisks.
The same with like Scotland, Japan. That's why I wanted no bad refereeing decisions. I wanted the game to go ahead.
Yeah.
And I didn't want Scotland like we have had since Craig Joubert in 2015. I didn't want any excuse.
Although with that said, if England do win through some dodgy guys,
oh yeah, I'll take that.
I'll take it.
Yes, exactly. Right. I mean, we'll talk about it.
Yeah, we just won't ever mention it.
Right. Oh, go on.
No, I was going to say.
Okay, the second game is Ireland, New Zealand. We've seen the teams, and can Ireland do it again?
Seems unlikely. It just seems unlikely. I've been saying this since the start of the tournament. They feel like a team scrambling to get back to their peak, almost as if they've, in their minds, I think that they feel that they've been better than they are, and that is a real damaging psychological place to be.
They've got big characters, lots of leaders, loads of caps, they've got a core of Leinster who have been all conquering over the last few years.
Until last year, of course.
Until last year, yes. So I don't worry too much about that. Most of this side were involved in the 2 wins. I think they've just got to do it again. And they're going to have to score over 30 points. That's pretty much how you beat New Zealand. You've got to score over 30 points.
It's interesting because the 2 wins, one they did, the Chicago win, they achieved it by scoring over 30 points.
The one at Dublin.
Was one try.
Yeah.
They
that was really bad conditions though, wasn't it? Loads of rain.
It was cold and wet and greasy, but it's worse conditions than this. But I'm kind of torn in my head. Do you go the 30-point route and go all-out attack and hope you score more than New Zealand, which is a gamble?
It is.
Or do you really try and shut up shop and hope you get... Because that game was won by a moment of magic from Stockers.
Yes.
Do you hope that Stockdale Ringrose or Lama off the bench gives you the one moment of magic and you reduce your penalties to... fewer than 5.
Yeah, that's what they've got to do.
No opportunity, no turnovers, because the South Africa game against New Zealand, New Zealand had 2 opportunities, 2 turnovers, they scored 2 tries.
Now,
that's all they need.
You boys probably know this about me already, but I am a superb tactician. So what I think I'd be doing in Joe Smith's mind is I'd have a game plan where I get the attacking capability from the Chicago game and then marry it to the defensive capability of the Dublin game.
It's going to be a rout. Say,
yeah, wow, oh my God. That's what we do. Ireland. Put your money on it now.
We score 30 points here and we concede 0 points here. Who's in? And all the hands go up and then you go and win.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've got a whole problem with that?
No. Hey,
you're
listen,
in. Perfect.
What a great team talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Off you go, boys. Good luck. they're going to be very, very narrow, I think, in this game, Ireland. I think they're going to be the ultimate expression of Northern Hemisphere rugby, which is weird, actually, because for a long time, they've been more than that. They've sort of started like that. They started, you know, organs blazing under Schmidt. Then they narrowed down. Then they sort of started to open up again. And I think, kind of like you referenced before, Tim, when you said like Northern Hemisphere teams or whoever said it, when they get into knockout rugby or serious situations or they need to rebuild, certainly like Saracens do, they start to narrow down. And I think this is going to be the ultimate expression of narrow Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah, they're going to absorb a lot. It's going to be like an elastic band stretching, but I just think New Zealand are going to ping, it's going to snap at
Well,
some
is
point.
It worth talking about New Zealand for a second? Because they have who I consider one of the best players on the planet, Brody Retallack, back. And that can't be underestimated. He is just
amazing,
a brilliant player. But then the rest of it kind of doesn't inspire me. I know they're very good individuals. You know, Kieran Reid is maybe in the same category now as me, as Rory Best.
I thought you said as me.
No, as like Rory Best, a guy who might have held on for a couple of years too long. And then you've got and a load of other lads like George Bridge and Richie Mwanga, and they're all very, very good, but they're not seasoned internationals. Good Hugh, you could probably fit into that.
Yeah, Good Hugh's played 1 year of Test rugby.
Yeah, Cody
Severis, exactly the same.
Joe Moody's been a backup for the Franks boys for quite a long time. Now he has got a lot of caps.
No, Joe Moody's he's always been a loose head.
Mm.
Where the Franks boys are tight heads.
No, one can play both sides because they have played.
Yeah,
in the same team.
Yeah, they played in the same team, but on different sides of the scrum.
Yeah.
So,
well, hang on. They're not both tight. No, they both can play tight head, but when
they both do play tight head. That's their primary position because one was Owen was always the starter for his career. He was always the starter with Ben on the bench.
Well, at Northampton, they'll be playing tight and loose.
Will they?
Yes.
So they haven't really done that internationally.
And the other one, of course, is Cody Taylor, who has been a backup for Dane Coles. who was on the bench.
Although Dane Coles has been injured so much, much in the last 18 months that Cody Taylor's started more games.
Yeah.
In the two Ireland-New Zealand games, Ireland haven't had Beauden Barrett at 15.
Yeah.
And they still don't. Well, oh, sorry, 15, sorry, sorry.
Yeah,
sorry,
they
sorry,
haven't been playing against Beauden Barrett. So it's a slightly different proposition. Albeit it's the same essential thing. They've got two sevens now. So what's changed?
Yeah.
Two sevens and Beauden Barrett at 15.
Yeah. And you are right to call out some of the guys with limited experience, like Goodhue, Reese and Bridge. And I was trying to think of ways that moment of magic, that if Ireland are going to do that tight game plan and not go for the 30-point attack and the 0-point defence. If they're going to play the tight game plan, trying to think where they can break New Zealand down. Jack Goodhue has played
great mullet.
Ridiculous mullet. Exeter Chiefs style mullet.
Yeah, I wish Luke Cowan-Dickie had kept his.
Yeah.
Shame.
Mullet-Dickie.
So, Jack Goodhue playing at 13. He has possibly only ever seen one Sexton wraparound in the flesh.
What?
One.
How do you cope with that?
So,
do you mean one that Sexton did 17 times in a row? Or do you just mean one?
He might have only seen one in that. The only time he's played against Ireland is that November test last year that Ireland won the very close game. And he might be, if Sexton can get that going and Goodhue is just all out of sorts. Imagine Bastereau and Uge trying to defend the wraparound And that's what I'm thinking.
There must be some real subtle misdirection, like great magicians, the stuff you don't see. There must be something.
The eyes go one way, the hips go the other.
There must be something Sexton does on that wraparound.
Maybe you're concentrating on the wraparound, there's something else you should be concentrating on. I don't know.
Maybe it's a double bluff. You're like, that doesn't look like a very effective wraparound. There must be something else I need to keep an eye out for.
He's not doing it again. He can't do it again.
And he's moving so slowly. It's like he's treading water.
I tell you what, not having Bundyaki is interesting because, of course, he's a big physical presence, gets over the gain line. They moved Henshaw into 12, I think, with Ringrose at 13.
Yeah.
That's quite exciting now.
Yeah.
I prefer that.
I think I do
I
as
think,
well.
I think Henshaw gives you more options as a 12.
Leinster.
And Ringrose is class.
I will never understand balance. As long as I live, I will never understand balance. Okay, so...
I've seen your Twitter feed.
I just don't get it. So why would you go for like a Ringrose Henshaw type combination? Okay, admittedly they might have been forced a little bit, but why would you go for like a Ringrose and then say actually we're going to remove Lama because we want it to go a bit more defensive? No, if you're going to do it, like just throw all of your attacking players in one go.
I think someone who will be probably sitting at home reflecting and thinking exactly that is Gregor Townsend.
Yes,
Why am I picking Greg Laidlaw and Chris Harris for my otherwise uber attacking backline?
Chris Harris gets a pass because he was the only one that was any good. But
once he moved to the wing,
throw him on the wing. Yeah. Get Hugh Jones in,
or Rory Hutchinson, or Mark Bennett.
Yeah, or all three of them. Just bring them along. And attack. Don't try and hedge your bets saying, well, I've got some attacking flair and now I'm going to augment it with defenders. No.
Temper it.
Yeah. In fact, if he's going to do that, which, of course, Gregor Townsend did, put Chris Harris at 10. Just forget it. Just forget the attacking stuff. Just defend. Go one way or go the other.
Yeah, Keith Earls is a very good positionally defensively.
Yeah,
who cares?
And Carney as well.
And Carney as well.
I guess that's the the non-flippant side of the coin, which would be to say they are going to have to field a lot of kicks. They're going to have to field a lot of intelligent kicks, and that's probably where they're going to launch their counters from. So as much as they don't feel like attacking players in that situation, they're probably the best.
It's really simple. Ireland are going to say, all right, they're going to be able to run from turnovers, but let's make sure when they get a turnover, they've got to go 70 metres, not 20 metres. That's basically Ireland's game plan, which is what you do against... That's exactly what I will be saying if England get through and New Zealand get through next week.
Henderson needs a big game. I'm very excited to see him. And do you know who I would have loved to have been playing this game?
Dan Levy?
Devin Toner. Hey, Dev. And... this is not a joke either. He doesn't get beat.
Hendo and Ryan is a pretty...
But that's a physical second rule partnership.
As someone said on the Under the Sticks podcast in Twickenham, if you need Devin Toner to win your lineouts, you've got bigger problems. And they're right. They do have bigger problems. Devin Toner kind of guarantees that you get a lot more ball than you otherwise would do. And with Retallick on the park... I mean, there's no other way to beat Retallick consistently.
Isn't it weird?
Really get
I understand what you're saying, but I always find it weird that you're going, 3 inches makes that much of a difference. 3 or 4 inches. Well, it shouldn't make that much of a difference. Oh, Devtone is 6'10", whereas Hendo is only 6'6".
Well, can I just say...
it shouldn't make that much of a difference.
Kind of. Just something which I noticed, right, and anyone who's played at a high level will say, no duh. I mean, that's so obvious. But something which I noticed live in the flesh... in the World Cup, and I've not noticed it before, is the height at which, or the amount at which, the jumpers are now leaving the lifters' hands. Now,
so certainly in the warm-ups, they were throwing Itoje up. So they're throwing him up with hands, say, mid-thighs and mid-hammies, mid-quads, mid-hammies. But then he's going up, and they're catching him just above the knees.
Yeah. So they are literally...
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
They're launching a Toji up. Yeah. But this is across all the teams. They were all in this. Yeah. So they're throwing these guys up.
It's like a 55 kg clean, isn't it?
Assist.
Snatch.
Or
clean and jerk.
So they're throwing
snatch
him
or press.
Yeah. He's leaving their hands.
Nothing.
And then the ball is intersecting. And this kind of blew my mind for a little bit, because obviously playing level 8 rugby and knowing a little bit about lineouts, you jack the guy up, he stays stationary, the ball hits him a second later. Well, international rugby, you can't even do that now. Because you've got to throw them up, they've got to be 3 inches out of your hands, and they've got to intersect with where the ball's going, and unless it's a terrible throw, which, like chest height, and then that's fine. But double top, that's an amazing skill.
How much of the... of your mind being blown was down to the strong zeros.
Oh,
yeah, but, and also I said, you're right. It is an amazing skill, but it's no more amazing than someone actually hitting double top in darts. It's like, wow, like you go up to a dartboard and go and hit double top.
Yeah,
actually, someone doing it's amazing, but you should be able to do it because you're a professional. It's all you do.
But a double top in darts would be far more amazing if you had to jackal that dart off a 110-kilogram man before throwing it, and then kick the dart into touch.
Here's a question for you. Which qualified team has got the best line-out percentage in the tournament so far?
Which qualified team?
So, quarterfinal
team. Yeah. I'm going to have a wild guess and say...
Think about who they've played against.
I go New Zealand.
New Zealand are... sixth. Sixth best.
I was thinking... Okay, so the opposite. I was thinking... I think only because of who they've played against, and partly England played without Thomas Lavanini against them, I'd think England were high.
England are third best.
Australia. Japan will be really good.
Yeah.
Japan are seventh best.
Seventh best.
Okay, well, I think what you've established is we don't know. So who is it?
Best, South Africa.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Second best, Ireland.
Just
interesting.
And Ireland actually had a more than a bit of a fright.
So maybe they won't miss Devon Toner. Predictions for this game then?
I've been trying to rack my brain to think of ways that Ireland are going to win this. And in these conditions, with this team, with the fact that Ireland have won two out of the last three encounters against New Zealand, so New Zealand will be unbelievably up this. They're going for their third consecutive World Cup. I cannot see an Ireland win. The only way is if they keep it ultra narrow and give New Zealand zero opportunities.
And New Zealand butcher opportunities. Yeah. Have a bad day at the office. I agree.
I cannot see that. So give me New Zealand by 10 points.
What do you see as... So you're saying, which is going to be my question, I'm sort of inferring from you saying 10 points, that you think an upset... Well, if you can call any game at this level an upset... of Australia beating England is more likely than an upset of Ireland beating New Zealand.
Yes. I do. I think that as well. The markets think that as well.
Yeah.
It's roughly one in six. The implied probability to be roughly Ireland win one in six of these games based on the betting markets.
And that. Death, taxes, and losing quarterfinals in World Cups. It's
glorious,
just what Ireland do.
Yeah, and again, I think, based on the teams, based on the conditions, based on everything I know, that one in six is probably about right for Ireland.
Which takes us on to Sunday, and well, let's deal with Japan, South Africa. Does anyone think this is going to be close?
I actually think
South Africa are going to do it comfortably.
Let me pose a different question to you, okay? Which I think is probably a better question than lead on to that. Do we actually know enough about Japan to call this intelligently? And the reason I say that is, before the tournament, we had zero expectation of them beating Ireland. Then
that's not quite fair.
I had pretty much zero expectations of beating Ireland. I thought they would beat Scotland.
25-point advantage to Ireland. 25.
And in the preview pod, I said when you look at Japan, look, Ireland won't be troubled by them, but Scotland 100% will.
Yes.
That's pretty much.
So then I thought, well, okay, they've got lucky once, nothing expected of them. They get up against Scotland and they didn't just beat them, they annihilated them, albeit with a certain amount of weakness. But I simply just don't know enough about this team to make an intelligent prediction because I've seen a lot of the South African team, and I think I've seen two games in full for Japan, and it maybe combined 60 minutes prior to that.
All right, a slightly different question again, and I know it's not a like-for-like comparison, but just if you imagine South Africa last week taking on Scotland, what do you think would happen?
More points to South Africa.
It probably would have ended up something like 40 points to 10.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm with that, yeah.
So I just think the power, it's not just... It's actually what I love. Talk about balance, yin and yang and all that. What I love about South Africa is this absolutely giant pack with six more giant men to come off the bench.
They are so...
And an electric back line.
They are so intimidating.
Nine and their back three and outside centre are just electric.
It's hard to disagree with you. I mean, yeah, they are awesome. They are... I can't remember a more impressive pack. I mean, maybe England's starting pack at the moment would be kind of running them close, but then England's replacements don't even hold a candle to South Africa.
Well, New Zealand did a job on them. Remember that?
Yeah. And I wonder, when I look back at performances so far, the only team I can possibly think of that hold a candle to Japan in terms of their skills and the way they play would be New Zealand. So that sort of breaks in Japan's favour. Outside of that, I don't see much else it does.
Did you rewatch South Africa and New Zealand? How did New Zealand undo South Africa so comprehensively?
So first 20 minutes was all South Africa.
Yeah.
They had so much territory in possession, they had so many opportunities, and after 20 minutes with all of that, they were 3 points to nil up. And then after 30 minutes... New Zealand were 17-3 up because of two turnovers that they exploited brilliantly. Now, when I was watching that, I'm trying to think through to this game and what I knew about Japan. So, New Zealand, their defence and the Crusaders' defence throughout all of Super Rugby has just been immense.
Yep.
They are masters at soaking up pressure, and then breaking. Japan's defence has been very good, but I just cannot see them. I cannot see them sustaining a 20-minute barrage like New Zealand did, and only conceding 3 points.
Yeah,
and I think if South Africa turn it on for 20 minutes like that, they could be 20 points up after that 20 minutes. Now South Africa cannot play like that for 80 minutes. They didn't against New Zealand. They couldn't against Italy. Even with Italy, when they went down to 40 minutes, they couldn't sustain that physical dominance for such a long period of time. But they will be able to sustain it for more than long enough against Japan.
Yeah, and Japan, I mean, I don't know the stats, but just with the eyeballs, don't look like they have anything around the breakdown to disrupt or steal. Now, I'd need to look at the stats to prove that, but that's just my gut feel. So how do they take the ball off South Africa?
Yeah, I get that. And I think... you're kind of both in line with where my thinking is, and if Japan are close after half an hour, then I think that the odds move more and more in their favour because they can move a big pack around, which is why South Africa have gone for six on the bench because Razi Erasmus is going to try and get them to keep that. Only two of the pack have got to play 80 minutes, so
crikey,
he's going to try and keep the intensity at that level. But the longer the game goes on, the more chance Japan have. I just think, unfortunately, and I want it to be close, and I want if South Africa are going to win, I want them to do it late on. I think it might well be done and dusted before halftime.
I'm not going to say South Africa are going to be that dominant, because if I think about the Ireland game where I was certain, so were the bookies and everyone thought Ireland were going to smash them, well, they lost. So I think it'll be closer than that, but yeah, South Africa will win. And by the end, maybe it's two scores.
The one thing I will flag in Japan's favour is the South African centres are good defensively. They're bloody direct, strong runners. They are nowhere near as creative or skillful as the Japanese centres. So maybe there's something that can be done to work. Instead of Japan can, they will not batter their way through them, but they can intelligently work their way around them like they did, well, for some of the island tries and against Scotland.
60 million people watched the game against Scotland. I hope it's close. I really hope it's close.
Small island nation.
Whatever happens, it doesn't actually it doesn't actually matter. The legacy is secure. You're looking for your phone.
Yeah, I am.
It's down there to your
right.
Oh,
thank you.
Which takes us on to the final game. Very, very intriguing one as well.
Yep.
Unlike the others, this is North v North.
And it's also the smallest spread. 6 points to Wales and that's it.
That I found that really interesting.
Yes,
because I see Wales doing a proper job on France.
Why?
Because they've shown that they can absorb attacking, really good attacking teams, but they've just got so much more, and they've got game breaking talents themselves, and they've got cohesion, they've got experience, they've got flair, they've got structure, they've got robustness, and yeah, I don't see this being as close as all that.
I absolutely agree with all of that. It is the yin and yang. You've got the discipline structure of the Welsh team, the chaotic lack of leadership and lack of structure of the French team, but there is that. There's always that niggling feeling. It's such a cliche, but it is a cliche because it's true. It does depend what France team turn up. If France can play like they did for the first 25 minutes against Argentina, or the first 5 and last 15 minutes against USA, there could be an upset.
Mm.
But I just can't see them doing that consistently
haven't actually seen their team. They've gone with the kids.
I've not seen it. I don't know if it's actually
it'll come out tomorrow.
Announced yet.
But I just think World Cup quarterfinals, it's time. And it's the same when I look at Australia. I think actually what will make the difference is Leo Leofano, as good as he is. And I could sound like an absolute prat and we could be listening back to this on Sunday very, very differently. But I just think Australia are going in not quite sure what their 10 is. France are going in with a guy that at the next World Cup is going to be a star.
Unreal.
But I just don't see it happening now.
Mm.
Yeah. Andre, convince me that France are going to win.
Okay, so the coolest thing in rugby at the moment to say is...
Resource the ruck.
Resource the ruck. I mean, that is easily the coolest thing.
Affect the turnover. Say it earlier, actually. I cringed.
It's do this counterculture thing and say, look, rugby's too professional now.
You're a proper rugby hipster, if that's the case. You've been doing that for years.
Exactly. You know, the idea of which France turns up is just a cliche. Don't forget they went out last year with a small whimper to France, to which I say, absolutely, absolute nonsense. France are good. France are good. I mean, they're not very good as France, but they're very, very good as all the individual constituent parts. And they only need to show up. And they only need to show up and do something like they did in Paris, where they gave the Welsh an almighty scare. Now, if we revisit history, that basically means that Wales lose that game, England probably win a Grand Slam, and this World Cup looks completely different. France are good. Their players are good. And, you know, they've got players such as the captain who's won 3 European Cups. They've got players in some of the, you know, the biggest club sides in the world. So the idea that these guys are completely incompetent is wrong. And if Wales go into there thinking that,
they won't. And it's interesting you pick up on the narrow and some would say fortuitous Paris win. Actually, a win in Paris should fill Wales with immense confidence. They shouldn't be looking at that because it's such a hard thing to do.
They will know in their heart of hearts if Ouzé didn't drop that ball or if things didn't go their way, they would be on the end of a bit of a beating there because France were physically dominant. Now, the flip side to this
rugby's
is...
Rugby's 80 minutes.
Well, yeah, but that game was a gift and I think everyone...
Because by the same token, if you want... But by that same token, if a different referee in the Argentina-France game and France are out of the World Cup...
Yep. I mean, fine. And sorry, just trying to work all this. What's happened here? It doesn't matter. I'll carry on talking. yeah. Sorry. The flip side to what I was going to say about that Paris game was France put out quite literally one of the biggest packs the world has ever seen, and the pack that they'll be going into the game with on Sunday is significantly smaller than that. And you know that and that those sort of things do matter. I'm going to go for a France win here. It just seems too easy and too obvious for Wales to roll in and steamroll France. And I don't think that they can. I think the French pack will be too physical, and I think they'll get some tries early doors. And also, we've seen in very small phases, France look pretty good. First half of Argentina, first 10 minutes and last 10 minutes of USA, and there are also very good players. So give me France by 10.
If England had had the same... If basically England had had France's performances and France had had England's, you'd be saying England were going out comfortably.
Yeah, but England not France. And yeah, England look at the game in a very English way. They consider it to be a sport, whereas the French consider it to be an art form.
We are the one nation that English way of looking at it has won. Is it more Grand Slams than anyone, and the only Northern Hemisphere team to win a World Cup? So you know, it serves us all right.
Yep, absolutely. But like I say, it isn't France. So give me France.
We're split at the moment, Phil. Where do you see this one falling?
Wales by. I don't think Wales will run riot, although this, Josh Adams in particular has scored some very nice tries, and Gareth Davis. Mm-hmm. But I think Wales by at least a score.
So, what I'm kind of picking up is Phil and I tend to be in agreement in that we're saying the most convincing to closest wins in the quarterfinals will be South Africa beating Japan, followed by New Zealand beating Ireland, followed by Wales beating France, followed by England beating Australia.
Yeah.
I
would say that, yeah.
I think...
So the most likely upset is England-Australia in my head.
Yes, I think that. I agree with that. I don't think we're going to see an upset in the quarterfinals, but we could sound very, very silly.
I'm just looking back at the last time Wales met France in the World Cup.
Was that Warburton red card?
It was Warburton red card.
Wow, it's a long time ago. It's a lot, 8 years ago.
9-6 against score?
9-8.
9-8. Yes, eight. Lee Halfpenny missed a long-range kick.
Warburton red card after 19 minutes.
Oh, God, that was one of the worst games of rugby I've ever seen.
Can you name any players...
I mean, it wasn't. It was a great game of rugby, but still.
Can you name any players... I think there's one French player who could play this
Medard.
Weekend. Medard. Very, very
exactly
good.
Exactly who I was going to say.
And French players, Welsh players, there's a few.
Alan Wynne?
One, two,
yeah,
three,
Alan Wynne, obviously.
Ken Owens?
Four.
Ken Owens wouldn't have been about then, would he?
He was not.
No.
Five.
George North. Was probably about.
George North was about.
Halfpenny was about.
Was Liam Williams about?
Halfpenny was about.
No.
Liam Williams was not about.
Jonathan Davis? JD? Was he about?
JD was there, yeah.
Hang on, we're missing an obvious one here.
Oh, the big lock with a beard, was he about?
Ball?
No, he wouldn't have been about.
No, Tips, no.
What?
I think you might have... So you said Halfpenny, North, Davis, Alan Wynne. There is one other who's in the squad, but it's... I don't think he'll be playing on Saturday. It's Bradley Davis.
Of course.
I love Bradley Davis.
And then...
Absolute warrior.
Then Stephen Jones will, of course, be coaching Wales as a tack coach. He was on the bench at the time.
Love it. Yeah. Right. Enjoy the quarterfinals. Hit subscribe in our feed and make sure you listen to our Premiership preview podcast as well.
Yes, Premiership! Oh, and do you want to just put the green and gold on the end of this, or should we do it separately? Or just go to green and gold?
Yeah. It's fine. I think we covered off a lot of it anyway. This is long enough. You don't need a whole green and gold one on the back of it.
But we do recommend green and gold, of course.
100%. Of course.
Yes, of course.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.